like she's been factory made from a Jane Austen novel, and you salivate for any photo she takes with her big sister Jane. You wonder what it would be like to grow up as the youngest with five Cobalt brothers, but she rarely tells you. I know her as my little cousin, the baby in the entire Hale Meadows Cobalt brood, the girl who bakes cookies for her crushes that are far out of her league, who falls madly in love with the idea of love more than the actual reality. She's fiercely loyal to her friends, and just as fierce to her family. Fair warning, you fuck with the baby of the family, and everyone will come after you. Over FaceTime, she waves.
Hi, Muffy. Hi, Pharaoh.
Hey, Audrey, I say, watching her eyes slowly widen at the sight of Oscar several bowling lanes down.
Oh my, Kenny, Kenny! Don't let him see my face!
She buries herself in a pillow, and Kenny rotates the camera back to herself. Audrey still hasn't overcome the mortification of sending apology cookies to Oscar. Jack, who returned to our booth, asks my cousin, Audrey, do you still have a crush on Oscar? We all just hear a mumbled noise from the pillows. Kenny keeps eyeing the bowling alley entrance. I can't just sit here and hope for the best. There has to be something more I can do. And I tell my sister, let me call this girl. She looks back at me, brows pinched.
What are you going to say?
I'm going to ask if she needs a ride here, ask what's holding her up, and tell her that I can help. That's it. Kenny takes a giant breath and she speaks into her phone.
I'll talk to you later, Audrey. I need to text Moffy her number.
She trails off, and all of our heads swerve as the door opens. A blonde 13-year-old girl in a flower sundress nears the hostess podium. Dear world, I'm so damn grateful for this good luck. She needed it. Best regards, a human who's a big brother.
Holy shit.
Kenny's eyes bug.
She's here.
She glances at her phone.
Audrey, go fall madly in love and you must tell me everything.
Audrey hangs up first. And before Kenny darts away from the booth, she stretches over Pharaoh and flings her arms around me in a short hug.
I'm sorry. I was the turd this time,
she tells me, and then she looks to Pharaoh.
But not to you. You were late.
She skips off at that, and Jack follows my sister to film Holly and Kenny greeting each other. I'm about to apologize to Pharaoh, but he's laughing hard.
God, your siblings.
I love him. I love that he loves my siblings, even when they're emotional and wound up and taking jabs left and right. And as his laughter fades, our hands intertwine and I tell him, you made it in enough time so I can beat you at bowling. He smiles softly, almost sadly. It fucking hurts. And I can easily fix my sister's tiny crisis. I can try to fix anything, but I can't even attempt to fix this. And I want to be patient. I need to be patient. If I ask what I can do, I know he'll just say, be here. And I'm here. But it's been over 20 hours since we last even saw each other. Those digits are becoming normal. And I can't remember the last time his shift was under 12 hours. Pharaoh, I want to find the right words, to tell him it's all right if he has to be late again, to not make promises to my little sister about next time. But it'll feel worse for him if he breaks it. But I'm not sure how to say anything. And more than that, I can practically feel his fatigue, the heaviness that mounts on his chest and tries to drag him under. I want to take that weight off Pharaoh, so damn badly. I open my mouth to speak, but aching, strained words come out of him first.
I'll be okay.
28. Pharaoh Keen. I made a mistake. It's been hitting me all week, all month, shit, possibly even the first day I stepped into the hospital. I thought I could weather it out. What's one more day, one more week, one more year? But my boots clap along the sterile halls, and I feel my time draining away with my energy and will to keep course. Pushing open the break room door with my shoulder, charts fill my hands, and I see the sofa. Instantly, I collapse on it lengthwise and kick my feet on the cushion. Charts lie on my lap, but I don't have any desire to finish them. I glance at the wall clock, around 15 minutes before I'll need to check on my other patient, unless someone codes. It's been that kind of day. Can't believe he tried to shock an asystole rhythm. Dr. Shaw says, entering the break room. The third-year med-peds resident heads straight for the coffee pot. Nice catch on that, intern Keen. I stopped a first-year resident from trying to shock a flatline. Asystolic patients are non-shockable and won't respond to defibrillation. And if an attending had been present, he would have done the same thing as me. I can't muster a response. I just click a pen. Do your motherfucking job, Pharaoh. Dr. Shaw pours coffee. You look beat. He sweeps me from head to toe. Rough day? I could explain to him how a simple diagnostic exam that had normally take 20 minutes lasted an hour and a half. The patient instantly recognized me and wanted pictures, wanted an autograph, wanted to Instagram live, which I turned down. And then she called her friends who showed up 10 minutes into the exam. I had to run through the whole parade again. It's not the same as patients gawking at my tattoos and piercings. I was used to that. Being famous? Not so much. I'm recognized every single day, sometimes minute by minute. I'm stopped walking down the hall. I'm stopped when I eat lunch in the cafeteria. When I'm minding my own fucking business during rounds. If it's not the patients or their families, it's the nurses, technicians, doctors, and hospital staff. They want to gossip with me about the Hales, Meadows, and Cobalts like I'm their direct outlet to secret information they'll never be allowed to have. Every day I have to brush them off. I'm perfectly fine with a bad reputation. I don't give a flying shit if people call me cold or arrogant or an entitled bastard. But when it affects my job, when it affects my ability to be the best at what I do, then I fucking care. I hate knowing that I'm not contributing enough, that I'm taking the spot of someone who could potentially do better work than what I'm doing. I could tell Shaw about this morning, when I had a patient who refused to give a medical history. He said he didn't trust me, not with that kind of personal information, and I tried to explain how there's clear patient confidentiality laws, but he didn't want to hear it. In his eyes, I have too many ties to the media and public, and the things that I say aren't just a whisper in the night. Hell, that wasn't the first time I had had to hand over a patient to another intern, or be reprimanded by the hospital board for not carrying as big of a load as the other residents in my year. And I can't argue with them. It takes me 3 times as long to do a job that they can do in under 10 minutes. I thought it'd be different coming back to finish my residency, but I didn't imagine this kind of struggle. I'm not sure I could have. I've become a celebrity doctor, and that's hindered my ability to help people inside Philly General. And I feel worthless here. 3 years. It's what I keep telling myself. That in 3 years, I'll be worth more again. I'll be out of this hospital and working for the famous families. But that's 3 years of running at a brick wall and not being able to breathe. I haven't been able to talk about this with Maximoff. I want to protect him from feeling at fault. Or from blaming himself. Broaching the topic means that I'm reaffirming his worst fears. I've lost an immeasurable source of happiness by being with him, by being famous. And that's not how I see it. He's my happiness, and I'm fighting for the day where I go back to him. And fuck, it's right there. The day is right in front of me. Just go. I sit up, boots dropping to the ground. I glance back at Shaw. It's just a long shift. I tell him, my mind racing. Just go. Tell me about it. He downs his coffee and then disappears into the locker room. When the door swings closed behind him, I stack the charts from my lap and place them onto the coffee table. Quickly, I push into the locker room. Hey, Shaw! I shout. Yeah? He sticks his head out, past a few cedar lockers, bare-chested. He pulls on a polo shirt. Who's on call tonight? I ask while I yank open my locker. Morris, Kim, and Bakshi. He narrows his eyes at me while I take off my scrubs and change into black pants and a plain shirt. I thought your shift ended at 10. In an hour. It does. I tuck my black V-neck in my pants and buckle my belt. For me, that hour will be stretched to 3 depending on how many people will stop me and ask for pictures. It's why I'm always late. To everything. Shaw hangs on his locker door. Is it Maximoff Hale? He asks. I can keep a secret if you need to talk or something. I'm good, I say. You know I'm not like those other people, Shaw continues. I've watched Maximoff Hale on TV since I was about 10. He's practically a real person to me, not just a celebrity. I've heard the same speech 100 different times, 100 different ways. Shaw, I say, grabbing my backpack and shutting the locker door. I'm good. He nods, but he blisters beneath my words. Yeah, Keen, of course. And he cold shoulders me as he returns to his locker. I pass him silently out the door. Just go. By the time I reach the parking garage, my pulse is racing. I drove the Audi to work, and I find the car where I left it. I don't slide into the driver's side. Immediately, I climb into the back, lock the car doors, and lie down on the stretch of the seat. Resting my boots on the leather, I dial a number and put the phone to my ear, staring up at the car's interior roof. The line rings once before I hear his voice. I was just thinking about you, Maximov says. It pummels me, and my hand cements to my mouth, raw emotion surging. I can't speak yet. My eyes burn, and I know this is where I would say, of course you were, Wolf Scout. You're obsessed with me. Pharaoh? Concern hardens his voice. You okay? I shut my eyes and drop my hand to my chest. It's sucking the life out of me, I breathe out, and I tell him everything about what's been happening. All of it. I knew one day I would, but I thought it'd be at the end of 3 years, and then I'd confess, but now it's come sooner. Because I'm done. I'm done. Maximov responds with more strength of heart than anyone could ever believe, ever know or see. I fucking love you, he tells me. And you should step back. Don't finish your residency. You don't need it, Pharaoh. I'd been worried that he'd apologize, stuck on a turntable blaming himself for this, and thank fucking God he's not. Thank God. I shift my phone to my other hand. Maximov, I knew I'd end this here, and I was about to ask his feelings on that. Hell, I didn't even need to ask. He just told me. But this choice comes with a greater cost than he might realize. See, I'm still able to be a concierge doctor. I passed my step 3 exam, so now I'm licensed and can prescribe medication, but I won't be board certified, I tell him. It means that if any of your family has to be rushed to an ER, I can't practice medicine inside Philadelphia General. I can't help. That hospital requires doctors to be in a residency program or board certified. I will be neither. It'll annoy you, Maximov tells me. Especially when you have to hand that task off, but Pharaoh, my family having serious medical emergencies like that, it might happen only a few times in your lifetime. It's not worth 3 years of being beaten down and feeling empty. I open my eyes. The parking garage is quiet and the Audi windows are tinted. No cameramen have found me yet. I never imagined not being board certified, I admit, and comb a hand through my hair while I lie down. I keep my palm on my head. It feels like halfway. I don't usually go halfway. I go all in. A bed squeaks on his end of the line. He must be sitting down. Maybe if you only loved medicine, it'd be halfway, Maximov says. But I think you're going all the way and you don't even fucking realize it, man. My eyes sear, staring unblinkingly at the interior roof. I start to smile at the thought. Medicine isn't the only thing that fulfills me. Protecting him, loving him, just being there. It's what I live for. I look away. Are you implying that I love you, Wolf Scout? Yeah, he says confidently. I am. I smile more. You're not wrong. Flashes start glaring through the car windows. The click, 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 too familiar, and paparazzi shout my name. But I stay on my back for another minute. There's a downside, I tell him. People will have a lot of opinions about me practicing without being board certified. Even if this isn't a measure of my worth or skill as a doctor, it definitely will be to the public. Fuck those people, Maximov says. I instantly breathe stronger, and I sit up, phone to my ear, camera lenses pressed to the windows. I'm ready to change course, and I'm spinning his world in a new direction, but at least this one puts us together again. 29. Pharaoh Keen. You want to be cremated or buried, Redford? Oscar. He thinks he's being witty since I'm a good 20 minutes from a lunch date with my boyfriend's dad and two uncles. And sure, Maximov will be at the restaurant too, but Wolf Scout is not the one Oscar thinks will grill me and kill me. I was gonna ask you the same thing since I keep shocking you to death. I send the text. At Joanna's confirmation, which I attended with Maximoff, no obligations in my way, Oscar admitted that he didn't believe I'd drop out of my residency a second time. And not a lot ever surprises Oliveira. "We're all glad you didn't go after the board certification," Oscar told me. "You went full Sheryl Crow if it makes you happy on us." I rolled my eyes and ended up smiling. It was an old inside joke about when the shit you love makes you sad. "Oliveira, reaching into archaic history." Oscar grinned. "I'm serving up some teenage Redford realness." Silence fell hard after that, both of us looking at each other and feeling the void of Donnelly at the Catholic Church. Whenever Oscar says realness to anything, Donnelly cuts in with, "Because you're the realest motherfucker I've ever seen." Especially during the times when it doesn't make any sense. But it fit too perfectly there. "Because you're the realest motherfucker I've ever seen." It brings me back to the present. To the Philly townhouse where the pipes groan as Maximoff takes a shower. But I'm not upstairs with him. 18 minutes until a lunch date with my boyfriend's family, and I'm lying on the mint-green rug where the coffee table usually would be. Black pants ride low on my waist, and Donnelly is tattooing me. His needle pierces the right side of my lower back, right above my ass. A sparrow, the only bird inked without color and the largest one on my body, spans most of my back with its feathered torso in the center. The tip of each wing touches my deltoids and reaches my traps. Further down towards my ass, its talons clutch a dagger. The sparrow and blade leave room for more ink on the lower left and right side, above my waistband. "Don't call Papa Hale sir when you see him," Donnelly says, tattoo machine in hand. "I did that after he found out I inked Luna's hip. And I'm telling you, he grew a third horn. Looked like he could have impaled me in the throat when ripped out my asshole." I chew double mint slowly and glance back at Donnelly with a pointed look. "Don't talk about ripping assholes where you're so close to mine with a needle." He smirks, not meeting my gaze as he works carefully on the design. He wears thin-framed reading glasses. "All I'm saying is that Maximoff's dad is no joke. I thought he was the funny one, sarcastic and shit, but I almost pissed myself. I thought Lauren Hale would do worse if he found out Donnelly tattooed his 18-year-old daughter. You still have your job?" I ask. "Barely." He pauses as a calico cat jumps off the Victorian love seat onto the rug. I throw a toy mouse and Carpenter chases it under the iron cafe table. I'm not scared of Lo, but I'm wondering what conversations he plans to start. Since the crash, we've stuck to one main topic. Maximoff rehabbing his collarbone. Easy shit. Something tells me this lunch isn't going to be easy. Donnelly resumes tattooing, the needle pricking his skin. Not painful. "The ink on my ribs hurts like hell, but this isn't bad." He tells me, "Cobalt parents never batted an eyelash when I inked Beckett." Mention of Beckett reminds me about him doing cocaine to help his ballet performance. I told Donnelly that I knew about it, but we didn't talk long. "If it's been hard being on Beckett's detail," I say now, "you should see if a car will let you transfer." I never asked if Donnelly supplied the drugs. Some bodyguards will, but Donnelly would let another person chop off his hand before he touched cocaine. I stay on my forearms, not looking over my shoulder at him. Donnelly inks me quietly, tattoo machine buzzing, and then he says, "I can't leave him, man." He lowers his voice. "I know I can't get him to stop. I mean, fuck me, his twin brother couldn't even convince him." I pop a bubble in my mouth. "Because Beckett thinks drugs make him a better dancer," I whisper. "And now he started thinking that he dances like shit without them." "I hate that," he mutters, and then speaks under his breath. He tells me how he can't talk to Beckett about his teenage years, because then Beckett would try to protect him and ask the Triforce to transfer Donnelly off his detail. Donnelly doesn't explain his past to me. I already know it. When he was 14, his parents gave him meth for the first time, and as an adult, he prefers not to be around hard drugs. Not out of temptation. Mainly, they bring back bad memories.
"Heidi-ho!"
Luna hops off the last stair into the living room.
Hi.
She raises a hand in a hesitant wave. "Luna. You covered your ink?" Donnelly mimes to his forearm where lyrics to Dreams by the Cranberries should be. The black ink is concealed with flesh-toned makeup. Hiding her tattoos is new, The plain dress, pinstripe ponytail, and simple makeup has been happening for weeks now.
Yeah, yeah.
She comes over and sits on the love seat. I raise my brows at her. Why do you keep looking less like yourself and more like everyone else? She shrugs, glances at Donnelly, then back to me and tells us,
Andrew says it's easier.
Easier for him. Luna, fuck this fucker, I say, grinding my gum beneath my molars. Maximoff has been afraid that her new boyfriend is the cause of Luna changing, and in four words, his fear has been confirmed. This guy wants a basic bitch, go let him date a basic bitch, Donnelly says while he finishes my ink. Don't turn into one. Luna watches the tattoo machine, lost in thought.
He's not all bad. He gives okay head.
I pop another bubble. Okay head sounds like bad head. Donnelly wipes my skin clean. If you're just looking to be eaten out, I'll eat you out. Hey! Maximoff cuts in on the bottom stair, eyes narrowed. His dark hair is wet from a shower, but he's already dressed. Jeans and a green crew neck. What the fuck, Donnelly? He shuts off his machine. I like eating pussy. Maximoff looks at him like he's lost his mind.
That's my sister.
Luna falls supine on the love seat in a groan. Donnelly packs his ink. I think you've embarrassed your sister, man. Maximoff looks whiplashed, and I can't stop smiling. I stand up, pants unzipped and unbuttoned. My tattoo just needs bandaged. The second he sees the new ink on my lower back, he zeroes in, fixated, completely forgetting about Donnelly and his sister. Now I know how to capture 100% of his attention. He even draws near me, dazed. My smile stretches. You're drooling. I'm glaring. He's a human heart eye emoji. Donnelly tattooed a wolf with a pirate eye patch, and two letters are inked on the patch. W.S. Maximoff reaches me and I rotate to face him so his gaze lifts to mine. And he tells me,
You broke one of your only rules.
My rule? Never get ink that relates to a boyfriend. My only exception stands in front of me. Either he hasn't figured that out yet or he's still coming mentally to the fact. Take it easy, Wolf Scout, I say. It's not like I tattooed your name on my ass. He makes a face.
You sure you haven't?
I chew my gum even slower. Damn, he wants to see my ass. He groans, annoyed that I fucked with his humor. I laugh hard, and his hand instinctively finds my hand. He doesn't realize he's given in that easily, and he almost pulls back. I hold tighter. And I'm here for this. I'm not stuck in a hospital. I'm not meeting up with him later just to meet up with his dad. Fuck, I treasure these moments so completely. But the unknown definitely lies ahead of us. I'd rather not crash and burn, but recently, crashing seems to be the name of some game I'm playing. Where do you see yourself in 20 years? That's the first thing his overprotective dad says to me at this casual burger joint, and we haven't ordered food yet. I'm actually in the process of taking a seat next to Maximoff, scraping the chair back.
We just got here.
Maximoff cuts in with a glare. Huh, I had no idea. Low drills his sharp-edged eyes onto me. Where do you see yourself in 20 years? Maximoff shoots me an apologetic look. To be honest, I'm slightly intimidated, mostly because I'd love to leave good impressions on them, better than I have in the past, but I can't be anyone other than me. Connor Cobalt, Reich Meadows, and Lauren Hale have already claimed the other side of the wooden table. Three larger-than-life men. Each one had a profound impact on Maximoff, and it's always clear to me when I speak to them just how great their influence was and still is to this day. Hell, I see them as different sides of my boyfriend. Connor is mental. He taught Maximoff intelligence, emotional restraint, and confidence. Lo is emotional, the sarcastic, loving, and empathetic pieces of him. And then Reich is physical, all determination and stubbornness and unshakable strength. I lowered down in my seat. Honestly, I'm not much of a planner. Maximoff almost smiles. He likes that answer. And he extends his arm over my shoulders. No life plans? Connor arches a brow. The heat of their gazes is hotter than any camera. I tilt my head. If by life plans you mean goals, then sure, you can't be a doctor without setting some, I say casually.
Are you always this vague?
Connor asks me. Good question, love. Lo says, and motions for me to answer. Maximoff mouths something to Reich, and that prompts Reich to throw a wadded napkin at Connor, who easily leans back and dodges the affront. "Excuse the Rottweiler," Connor tells me. "Continue." Reich rolls his eyes and buries his attention in a menu. He mouths, "Sorry, Moff." I'm a little bit surprised that Reich Meadows isn't going hard on me like the other two. Then again, I helped his daughter in the car crash, and I'm not a bodyguard anymore, and that was his biggest qualm with me dating Maximoff. "Am I always this vague?" I repeat their question, one that I've never met this directly. "With anyone who isn't in my bed, yeah, I tend to be less forthcoming." Reich looks up from a plastic menu. "Who else is in your fucking bed?" "Just your nephew." Maximoff is currently pinching his eyes like he's wishing this were one of his little alternate universes. Low leans forward and asks, "What is it about my son that made you want to spend time with him?"
"Dad!"
Maximoff growls, his neck flushing. My smile is killing me. "Let Pharaoh answer the question, bud," Low says while he eagle-eyes me to death. Just like that, my smile fades, and my eyes flit briefly to Jack Hyland, who films our table with another producer of We Are Calloway. We're in a private section of the burger joint. Photos of old rock bands hang on the green-leafed wallpaper. But I can feel the presence of a camera. "Any portion of this can be edited out," Connor tells me, perceptive of my body language, "and none has to be aired." I agreed to be a part of the docu-series. Anything that brings me closer to Maximoff and his family, I want to do, and plus, since my life is very fucking public, there's more to gain and less to lose with We Are Calloway. It's a highbrow award-winning docu-series aired on a premium cable channel. "Noted," I nod, and Jack flashes a charming, "You're doing great" smile behind the camera. I shake my head and I ball up the paper to a straw. "Remember my question?" Lo asks me.
"Pharaoh remembers everything," Maximoff interjects and then groans at himself. He swings his head to me and rakes a hand through his brown hair. "I didn't mean it in a good way."
"I think you did," I tease. He plasters on a decent scowl, and that's when a 20-something waitress brings out a tray of ice waters. I lean back in my chair and wave her to come here. "Can you get us a baggie of ice?" I ask since my boyfriend put more stress on his muscle earlier when he wrenched the car door open. I've noticed how he shut his eyes in longer beats, wincing.
"Of course,"
she says.
"Anything else?"
"A coffin," Maximoff interjects, "for my immediate death?" I roll my eyes. He's not dying, but he is dramatic. The waitress chuckles before leaving the table, and I turn to Maximoff. He's looking really deeply into me. My chest falls in a heavier breath, and fuck it. I kiss him. Our mouths meet, softly and tenderly, and I feel his lips rise beneath mine. He likes that, and so do I. When we ease back, I drop my arm to his chair. Maximoff still holds my shoulders in an assured embrace, and Lo is waiting for me to answer.
"Dad, don't make him answer that question," Maximoff cuts in.
Lo doesn't flinch. "Are you willing to watch out for my son's well-being tonight?" Maximoff covers his face with his hand, a second away from groaning. "All nights," I answer, trying not to laugh at my boyfriend's distress more than anything. He's making this easier on me. "What are you two doing tonight?" Lo asks. "Staying in," I say easily and look to Maximoff. He nods.
"Maybe watch a movie? Pharaoh has never seen Batman Returns."
"No DC at the table," Lo snaps. "I swear to all living Marvel things, I grabbed the wrong child in the home goods store."
His eyes almost soften when he tells me, "I lost him in the toilet section carrying around a plunger in aisle 4.
"I was 3, Maximoff explains to me. "I thought it was a sword."
I smile, picturing that. And this is one of those moments where I can feel Lowe's love for his son. I didn't have that. It's just a fact. But when I have kids, I want to give them that kind of unconditional, overwhelming attention and care. Our waitress returns to take our orders, and after she leaves, Connor tells the table,
"In other news, I was offered a condom sponsorship this morning."
Reich almost spits out his water.
"You have 7 fucking kids!"
"Royal sperm,"
Lo quips.
"Don't fucking encourage that,"
Reich says, and points at Connor's billion-dollar grin with a butter knife. With more seriousness, Reich asks Connor,
"When's the last fucking time you even used a condom?"
I don't really want this information at all,
Listening to uncles and dads talk about sex is not my forte. I'm just not used to this shit. Sex was never a topic of discussion unless it was an academic lecture about reproduction or ejaculation. I learned about fucking from the internet or friends growing up. I didn't have advice on lube from my uncles like Maximoff. I didn't have the talk from my dad. No safe sex lecture, because the old man assumed I was smart enough to know about STDs from the medical journals that I skimmed. I glance at Maximoff, who looks absolutely unfazed. I've always loved how close he is to his family, and I only want our relationship to bring him closer to them. Decades. Connor answers the last time he's used a condom. Are you taking the sponsorship offer? Maximoff asks while an appetizer of string fries come out on our table. I wouldn't, Connor swishes his wine. It'd have a negative impact on the children if I advertised my face or name on a condom line. I've noticed that whenever they're just with Maximoff or Jane, they always exclude those two from the children category. I unscrew the mustard bottle. Lo focuses on me. Are you willing to show my son the same respect that I've raised him to show you? Maximoff makes a face. Where the fuck are these questions coming from? I watch as Lo digs into his pocket and pulls out a crumpled piece of paper. Questions for the overly tattooed boyfriend of myperfectson.com. He gives me an iconic dry smile. I hate tattoos. I know, I say with a nod. Good thing your son loves them. Connor and Reich turn to Lo, gauging his reaction. And Lo is narrowing his sharp-edged eyes at me, and very dryly he says, Does he? Maximoff pipes in, I really fucking do. An amused smile breaks across my face. Fuck, I can't believe he admitted that in front of me. And Lo laughs, a real laugh, all before passing the questionnaire to his brother. Reich reads the paper in silence. These are fucking terrible, Reich says, his gaze veering as our food parades over. And while we all dig into burgers and fries, we talk about the latest Fourth Degree movie, the Philadelphia Eagles, and how in July all three families have planned a trip to Greece. But instead of Greece, we keep saying Tahiti in case anyone overhears. It's the code name. That trip is approaching fast, and it spans over Maximoff's birthday. It's a vacation that I wasn't supposed to be attending, because I should have still been in a residency program. Now that I'm out, I can go. I notice Jack Hyland setting his camera down towards the end. He speaks in Tagalog on his phone to someone. I hear the name Jesse, his little brother. As we're winding down eating, Connor asks me what's one thing that surprised me the most about losing my privacy. The three of them reminded me that they were in their early 30s when they became famous after a scandal, and they knew what privacy felt like. They weren't born into fame like Maximoff. I toss my napkin on my plate and lean back on my chair, considering his question for a half second before the answer reaches me. I look between the three men across from me. I consider my sexuality the fifth or sixth most interesting thing about me. Being gay isn't all of who I am, but it's definitely a big part. I take a beat. And I'd have to come out all the time. Whenever a girl hit on me, whenever I introduced a boyfriend, I'd have to say I'm gay over and over again. It wasn't uncommon for most people to assume I was straight. That's changed. Being in a public relationship with Maximoff, broadcasted to the entire world, means that I don't need to come out nearly as much anymore. I start to smile with a laugh, and that still surprises me. It still kicks me in the chest. Maximoff shares my smile for a second, and he nods to me like, it's a good feeling, huh? I prefer to live my truest self. As terrifying as that can sound, there's no freer feeling than being able to be me. Motherfuckers, I swear behind the wheel of the Audi. Paparazzi bang on the car windows, so we'll roll them down. The rapping fists on glass need to stop. We haven't left the restaurant's graveled parking lot yet. Maximoff's dad and uncles inch ahead of us in a Land Cruiser, and security is behind us in another SUV. Add on these other facts, lunch ran late, the sun has fallen, and each camera flash sears like a strobe light. Maximoff! Pharaoh! I slam on the horn. Move! I shout without rolling down the window. Maximoff yells at paparazzi. You're gonna get run over! He gestures them to get the fuck out, but they just crowd closer, standing in front of the hood with hefty cameras. It all goes to hell when the Land Cruiser finds an exit and veers onto the street. All the paparazzi that had been crowding their vehicle suddenly rush ours. One of us should get out, Maximoff says. I assess him in a quick sweep. He's been death-gripping his leg, and I know he wants to be in control in this situation, but he has no license. Hold on, I'll be able to reach the street. It takes a long second, but the tires meet the curb before I'm blocked in again. Hordes of cameramen put their own safety at risk. They're standing on the road. Fuck. You've got to be kidding me, Maximoff growls, squinting at the harsh glare. He yells at them through the windshield. You're going to kill yourself! Flashes burst directly through my passenger window, and my aviators aren't shielding the light. I'm rolling down my window, I warn Maximoff. As the window rolls, the noise level amplifies, and I scream, Move! Get the fuck out! You're not allowed to do this!
Pharaoh! Maximoff, look here!
A cameraman puts the lens to the windshield, and Maximoff almost loses it. He unsnaps his seatbelt. Stop! I extend my arm over his chest. You're not fighting these bastards. Maximoff suddenly reaches across my body and shoves the fuck out of a camera that inched into the car. A camera that almost hit me in the face. I roll up the window, my pulse thrashing because Maximoff is in serious pain. He stretched his right arm, used strength on his right arm, right shoulder. Maximoff, I say tensely, lifting my aviators to my head. I'm all right. He shuts his eyes, breathing through his nose and leaning back against his seat. I'm gonna puke. I reach back and find a workout towel on the floor. I toss it to him and he throws up between his legs into the cloth. The cameras go wild, banging the glass. I keep a hand on Maximoff's back and I check through the rear windshield. I can barely spot security's SUV through the masses. Instinct tugs at my body to jump out of the car, create a path, but also keep him safe. Keep Maximoff safe. I need security's help. I've been in that SUV before, and sometimes paparazzi will purposefully cage bodyguards and try to jam doors, just so they can't reach their clients. Bruno should be widening a path for us to drive. If I could crack a guess, I'd say he's being trapped in the SUV. I put a hand on the wheel. I'm about to drive more aggressively, and whoever I lightly hit, I hit. Before I press the gas, water drips on the windshield. I hear ping, ping, ping. I smell rain on metal. I feel gravel. Shit. This is a steering wheel. A leather steering wheel. I grip harder. Fucking pissed. Out of all the times this could be happening, a storm has to rip through the sky now? Pharaoh, Maximoff calls out, breathing hard through physical pain. He sees the rain cascade onto the windshield. Wolf Scout. I hear the crush of metal. My pulse spikes into a cutting breath. Slowly, I reach out for my boyfriend, and his hand is in mine. I bring his large palm to my face. He clutches tighter. I breathe, trying to reorient my senses. My hand encases his jaw, smooth from a close shave, and I blink and only see his tough forest greens. He's searching for the intense focus in my eyes. I'm sure it's flickering in and out. Camera flashes still shade us. A sinking realization. I can't drive Maximoff to safety. All I want to do is drive us somewhere else, someplace else, and I'm certain Maximoff wishes he could do the same. With another breath, I take what limitations I'm given, and I'm going to work with them. My heartbeat rides a rocky roller coaster, rising and falling in rapid succession. Here's what's gonna happen, I whisper to Maximoff. I'm gonna climb in the back seat. I'm coming with you. I almost smile. That is the plan. I unbuckle my seatbelt. You'll need to call security. Tell Bruno he has to drive. I will. Before I go anywhere, I hone in on his pain. I pull at the collar of his crew neck to check his traps. The muscle is inflamed and swollen. He needs ice. Maximoff's hand descends to my neck, and while he dials security, he continues to search my eyes. 30. Pharaoh Keen.
There's no way to swing this in your favor, our publicist says over the phone. Speaker on, I listen to her talk to Maximoff.
It looks bad. It will continue to look bad. You should have thought about the repercussions before you took a midnight flight to a private villa in Mykonos.
I comb a hand through my dyed white hair, and Maximoff exchanges an irked look with me.
Kendra isn't one of my favorite people, and as much as we're on a final straw with her, she's definitely on the last one with us. In most instances, we've chosen to take the media backlash, every hit, rather than sideslip away from it. And the mud slung at me stings a little bit this time. Pharaoh Keene quit his residency to vacation with the Hale family in Tahiti. The trending headline is not even close to the truth. Shaded underneath pergolas, Maximoff sits rigidly on the wicker bar stool, cool wind whipping his dark brown hair. I slice a pineapple on the bar counter behind him. Our views from the villa are endless blues, the Aegean Sea serene and breathtaking, contrasting the paparazzi shitstorm we left behind in the States. Maximoff raises his phone to his lips. Kendra, he says, you don't need to come up with a manifestation on the meeting of the universe. Just send out a press release and explain that Pharaoh had to quit because he was a distraction in the hospital. That's it.
It won't help, Kendra says, but I'll do it.
She hangs up abruptly. That was rude. I bite into a sickly sweet pineapple slice. On her part, not yours. I lick my thumb. Maximoff eyes my smooth movements. I can't blame her. He places his phone on the bar. This is the third press release in less than 2 weeks. It's her job, I point out, and I skim his taut muscles. Regretting this trip? I don't want him to wish we'd stayed back. I'd love nothing more than for Maximoff to take pleasure in every moment of this vacation. No one else is in our private villa. We arrived 5 days earlier than the rest of the family, and the plan is to meet up with them later on their yacht, cruising around the Med. Fancy shit doesn't compare to being with Maximoff. Just here. Now. And I want to give him the most romantic getaway that he's never had before. For 5 days, no kids running around, no siblings to worry about, and no meltdowns he needs to clean up. All of that mayhem, which we both love to face head-on together, will come later. No, no regret, Maximoff says strongly, standing up and swinging his right arm slowly like a pendulum. He's allowed to stretch now, and he'll do this 55 times a day. As long as he's not doubled over in pain or puking, I'm in his camp. He asks me, do you? I stare up at the baby blue sky, tilting my head from side to side. Never. I eat another slice of pineapple and twirl the knife between my fingers, staking the blade in the cutting board. I almost start laughing at how much he's staring at my movements. Yeah, you're too easy. You're easier than me, he counters. I saw you checking me out. I smile in an actual laugh. Since we've been in Greece, only for 5 hours so far, I've made no effort to hide my attraction to Maximoff, even if Wolf Scout's ego could be brought down a couple pegs. You are my boyfriend. My love. He tries hard not to smile, and his brows bunch. I could just be a figment of your imagination. Maybe I'm not even real. Maybe you're not real. My brows spike with a barbell piercing. He wants us to be imaginary together. I smile, wider off his grimace, and I give him a hot once over. His form-fitting sunset-orange swim briefs display the cut and carve of lean muscles and mold his assets. But it's his tough-as-hell confidence that magnifies his beauty. And there are times where I catch him shutting his eyes and soaking up the sun. When he's at peace, the entire world seems to still. I come around the bar, and his gaze glides down the ink along my muscles. My black trunks are above the knee length, the fabric looser than his bathing suit. Swiftly, I cup his face with both hands, and his chest elevates in a heady breath. You feel very real to me, Wolf Scout. His hands ascend my abs, and he glances at the crystal clear pool behind us. Looking back to me, he says, no paparazzi. No one knows we're in Greece. It's all private. I drink in the way he's staring at me, as though I'm the only man on earth, the only person he'd ever choose in the beginning and the end. And I toss his words around in my mind, figuring out what he's leading me towards. You want to walk around naked outside? Kind of, he says. Kind of, I repeat. Maybe. Getting clearer, he smiles. Yeah, I want to. I love a good surprise, and Maximoff wanting to experience this uninhibited act is a surprise to me. I drop my hands off him, and I finger the waistband of my swim trunks. Maximoff tries to beat me at this, drawing down his orange briefs quickly.
He steps out of them in under a second, buck naked outdoors, with so much confidence you'd think he does this every Monday.
"This is your first time doing this?" I ask, to be sure, pulling off my trunks. Maximoff watches me.
"Yeah, first time." And he chose me to be here for it, time and time again. He could have picked anyone in the entire world, and he wanted me. My chest rises. That feeling never gets old.
Maximoff suddenly sprints to the pool and dives in a perfect, gorgeous arc. But he tucks his right arm to his chest. I'm right behind him, diving into the cool water. When I breach the surface, we find each other, our legs lacing, wet beads rolling down our faces, chiming. That noise abruptly cuts into the moment. Must be text messages. I set my phone to silent when we reach the villa, so it's not mine.
Answering those? I ask him.
No, it's just family group chats. He guides us toward the corner of the pool. They're probably talking about that article. He leans in to kiss me, chiming, again, and again.
Maximoff rolls his head back in aggravation and then glowers at the phone that vibrates next to the plate of pineapple.
"Ignore it," he tells me, water lapping around us as we move.
"I am," I say, "a lot better than you are."
My shoulder blades hit the stone edge, this end of the pool about 8 feet deep, and I cup his ass while he's up against my chest. He rakes his hand through his wet hair. Pretty sure I'm not even thinking about it anymore.
More chimes. Now pings.
He's forcing himself to keep eye contact and not glance at his phone. My smile stretches.
Want the gold star now or later?
Never. That was a firm never. As much as I like stoking his irritation, I'd rather train his concentration off the relentless chimes and pings, and also several beeps.
The disturbance is really grating Maximoff, and not in a good way. At the corner of the pool, I hoist myself out of the water and take a seat on the stone edge, while I lean back on my hands, his mouth parts. I'm exposed, beads of water dripping down my inked body and hot sun beating on my skin. And I ask him, "What's your favorite tattoo of mine? And if you say none, then I'll just think you're copping out."
Maximoff is staring off into space. I kick water at him. He wipes his face and shoots me a middle finger.
"I'm thinking, asshole. Give me a century."
I laugh, about to banter back, but he distracts me by swimming closer. Maximoff fits his body between my spread legs, and he clutches both my tattooed knees, and then his hands run up my thighs. Resting his forearms on them, he braces his weight on me, using my body as a support so he won't have to tread water. Our gazes cement.
Fuck, Maximoff. My nerves prick hot.
"Need me to repeat the question, Wolf Scout?" I ask, voice husky.
"No, I heard you."
He devours me whole.
"Your newest one is my favorite. I love that he loves the pirate wolf.
Before I got that one, what was your favorite?"
Maximoff already has the contextual meaning and significance to my tattoos. He asked me about them, back when we first started dating. It's not a long story or some heart-aching thing. As a kid, I was obsessed with pirates the same way that a child who grows up in a butterfly-decorated room loves butterflies. Only I didn't have a themed bedroom. On my desk, I had a framed photograph from Halloween where I wore a pirate costume. I was 2 years old, and my mom was holding me in her arms. Inked on my fingers, K-N-O-T-T-A-M-E. It's just a play on sailing knots, and also being untamed. It's not that deep. And all the skulls, pirates, daggers, sparrows, compasses, and ships are just things I loved from childhood to teenage adolescence to adulthood. I watch his gaze roam my body with affectionate, wanting strokes. His breath shallows, and my muscles contract. I take a hand off the wet stone and glide my fingers through his brown hair, pushing the wet strands back. He says, "I figure my favorites have to be the ones I think about the most." His mouth is hot against the inside of my thigh, lips trailing over the outline of an inked treasure chest. My blood cranks.
"Which one do you always think about?"
Chimes sound loudly. The noise hasn't ended, but for some reason, this one pulls his gaze. I take my hand off his head and rub my rousing dick. That captures his attention. He's back on me, his breath shallow, and he pries my hand off. He puts my hand on the back of his head. and he also takes my shaft in his fist. My muscles contract. Fuck. Fuck. His aggression stirs the blood in my veins. I'm not surprised that Maximoff knows what he wants. I push his hair back again. Answer me before you blow me. He tugs at my length.
Who said I'm about to suck you off?
Your eyes, I quip. My breath knotted in my lungs. I cup the back of his head tighter.
Maximoff.
The wings on your neck, he answers. The swords on your throat. The red sparrows on your collar that fly between the masts of the ships. And the skull pirate on your ribs. Those ones I think about. All the damn time. He lowers his mouth to my hardening cock, taking me between his lips. Fuck yes. Pressure squeezes around me and my muscles ignite on fucking fire. Skin blazing from more than the sun, his head bobs with the up and down movement of his mouth. Fuck, I grunt. My feet flex in the pool water. I could look at the breathtaking landscape. I could look at the blue horizon and the clearest sky and the majestic views, but I can't look away from him. From his forest greens that tunnel into me with love and sex and soul-deep need and desire. Maximoff, I groan. His biceps flex as he readjusts his support on my thighs. I sit up more, staring down at him, which he's not the biggest fan of. He glares and tightens his hand around the base of my shaft. Fuck. He pushes my chest. I lean back, my elbow on wet stone. My veins throb, and with my hand on his head, I feel him go up and down, up and down. The friction feels fucking incredible. I grit down, arousal skyrocketing. I apply pressure on the back of his head, pushing his mouth further down. My cock hits the back of his throat. Fucking fuck. I pulse and just come. Hard. A groan scrapes my throat, lips closed as I clench my teeth. Fuck. My head almost lolls back, my heartbeat shoved in my esophagus. Maximoff swallows my cum, and stroking me two last times with his hand, he pulls himself out of the water with absolute ease, and he stands over me, feet on either side of my thighs. I look up. Water drips down his sculpted swimmer's build, and his cock is in line with my mouth. Damn. My chest caves in a ragged breath. I clutch his ass before he tries to put my hand there. No teasing, he commands. Just take me in your mouth. I roll my eyes. He's bossy as hell, but he's being bossier than usual. I figure out why in a split second. His muscles bind, and he glances over at his chiming phone. The outside interruptions are annoying him. You can put it on silent, I suggest. He leaves me and he says, I'm turning off my phone. My brows jump. He rarely powers off his phone, because it means he's handing off familial responsibility to another cousin, another sibling, someone else in reach other than him. You sure, Wolf Scout? He's at the bar and the chiming suddenly ends. Positive. You sure we should do this? Maximoff asks me while I massage his deltoids with lotion, our legs tangled with soft sheets. I'm careful of his healing injury, but he's not referring to my hands. We're on our villa's king-sized bed. Sheer white drapes billow off the canopy around us, and hot wind gusts through the ajar door that leads to the private pool and patio. The front door is locked. Maximoff is referring to the laptop he just opened with no fucking hesitation. He already typed in a porn site. Now, all of a sudden, he slammed to a halt. What are your reservations? I ask, gently kneading his back muscle. He spins around to face me, causing my hands to fall off him. Something is eating at him, and I want to call it fear, but it looks more like distress. It drives a knife in my gut. I reach out and hold his hand. I keep thinking about the past 3 days here. He gestures to his head. I think about how I've loved every damn second. I love how we've just lounged in the sun, swam, fucked, eaten, and slept. But then I think, is it bad that I love that? I should want to leave the villa.
Maximoff.
I try not to smile, but you don't want to, I say matter-of-factly. Yeah. He scrutinizes my rising lips, and it must be contagious because he begins to smile. What? I lift my brows at him in a wave. Man, I didn't plan anything romantic for you outside of this villa.
and you didn't plan anything for me for a reason, and it has nothing to do with paparazzi. This isn't a 5-day unhealthy hideout from the world. It's a 5-day vacation before we link up with your family. He listens closely. And you're allowed to turn off your phone. It doesn't mean you're blocking everyone out to drown in a vice. There is no vice here. I'm guessing this is the origin of his perpetual thoughts. He's kept his phone off for 3 days. It's not something he does, and there is guilt in the act, especially if he's having a good time. And we've had a lot of sex at the villa, but it's been healthy. Not compulsive, not used to squash anxiety. See, I've read up on sex addiction for him, on everything I could find. His small smile has been fading. He needs more. I can give him more. You don't relax easily, but you've been extremely fucking relaxed the past 3 days. I let go of his hand and squeeze 2 fingers together. You have a big thing for ordinary shit, and I have a bigger thing for doing the ordinary shit with you. Breakfast in bed, massages, watching movies, laying out, swimming, showering together. These could fill his endless days, and I'd want them to fill mine too. His eyes almost redden. Repeat that? My pulse beats hard. Which part? All of it. I say it all again for him. Maximoff smiles a gorgeous fucking smile when I've finished. All right. I want to do this. He leans back on the birch headboard, taking the laptop with him. I follow suit, shoulder to shoulder, our ankles hooking. You picked the video, Maximoff tells me, scrolling on a familiar gay porn site. How about you pick? I'm definitely curious about what he'd gravitate towards, and I'm not sure he feels the same about me. No thanks. He eyes my lip piercing. I smile. Looks like we're at a standstill. And you want to kiss me. He's so impatient that he ends up scrolling and clicking into an amateur video. I skim the title. 2 Passionate Guys Make Love. Shut up, he tells me. Didn't say anything. But my smile touches my cheeks, and I do say something now. There's nothing wrong with wanting to make love, Wolf Scout, and being honest here, I'd say it's a preference of yours. He turns his head, brows furrowed at me, confused. It stings my heart a little bit. We've made love before. All of the time. Yeah? He shuts the laptop, sets it aside. Remind me, Farrell. I stroke his hair back, my hand running down his jaw, our mouths crashed together, nerves lighting to 500 degrees. We shed our boxer briefs and wrestle in the twisted sheets, kissing the hell out of each other. We draw closer together when we turn on our sides, his weight on his good shoulder. Fuck, Maximoff groans after I nip his neck with my teeth. I suck harder, and then I kiss his jaw, his lips again, and his skillful tongue slides over mine. Blood simmering, he bucks into me for harder friction while our mouths meld together. Grinding his pelvis against mine, my cock hardens. I break our mouths and pat the mattress. Finding a bottle of lube, my chest presses firmly to his chest while we're on our sides. Our eyes collide, and I lather my length. Huskily, I tell him, I'm gonna come inside of you, Wolf Scout. He rocks his hips into me, squeezing my ass and groans against the crook of my neck. Fuck me now, man. He strokes his own cock. Fuck. I tuck him more to my chest, and I lift his leg over my waist, keeping my arm underneath his knee so he'll stay hoisted. Look at me, I whisper. He pulls his head back, his eyes melting into mine. He looks overcome and at the peak of arousal, and I haven't even pushed into him yet. I tease his hole open with 2 fingers. His muscles flex, his breath catching. He's giving himself to me with so much trust and love and care. It amplifies an already visceral, primal feeling that connects him to me, that douses me with kerosene and lights me on fucking fire. Sweat built on our skin, I move my fingers and I ease my erection into him, slowly. Breathe, I tell Maximoff, our eyes locked. Oh, fuck, he grunts. The pressure wells around my cock, his tightness overwhelming me, and I use more lube before I push deeper. Fuck, Maximoff. My muscles pull taut, and I'm all the way inside of him. I rock my hips and I hold the back of his head in the most protective, secure grip. Not letting go, our mouths a breath away, and we stare unblinkingly, feeling every fucking thing and seeing it well in the other's eyes. Oh, fuck, he groans, his lips broken open with throaty noises. My hand shifts to his jaw, encasing his face, holding as fucking tight as him. His eyes almost roll, almost gone.
Pharaoh.
Pharaoh. He death clutches my shoulders like he's falling off a mountain and I'm his harness. I grit down.